From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, we get the lowdown from the Toronto International Film Festival. Premieres there include Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker, Tom Hanks as Fred Rogers, and a black comedy about Hitler. Then Nick Offerman. You might know him from his now meme legendary role of Ron Swanson on Parks and Recreation. He tells us about his woodworking and a new solo stage show that's touring internationally.
At the heart of Parks and Rec, and hopefully at the heart of my material, is a good-natured ribbing about how people are complicated.
All that coming up on The Frame. The Toronto International Film Festival is more than halfway over, and already a number of highly awaited films have had their North American debuts there. So we thought it was a good time to check in with Hollywood Reporter film critic Beyondrea July. She's in the thick of things way up north. And July says the best surprise showing so far has been Hustlers, which stars Jennifer Lopez and Constance Wu. July says that Hustlers strikes a perfect balance of being both thought-provoking and entertaining.
It's kind of a corollary to the 2008 economic crisis from the perspective of working class people. In this case, the working class people are strippers, but it's almost irrelevant what they do, believe it or not. So it's very thought-provoking, and you get to see a whole different side of how the economic crisis affected that group of people. You know, J-Lo in top form. Many, many people have said, you know, this is one of her best performances of her career, and there's much Oscar buzz around it. And just the whole ensemble cast and Laureen Scafaria's directing choices, I was just really impressed with.
And it does feel like Toronto, unlike, say, Telluride and the Cannes Film Festival, has really done a good job in programming movies not only made by women, but that are about female empowerment and about surviving things like sexual assault. So you have Hustlers. There's a Helen Reddy documentary, I Am Woman. There are movies that are very closely about Me Too narrative films, Instinct and The Assistant. And then there's a documentary film about Bikram called Bikram Yogi Guru Predator, about the founder of Hot Yoga. Tell us a little bit about Eva Orner's documentary about Bikram.
It's about his long history of sexual predation on teachers in his very expensive $10,000 teacher trainings. And it's also about how he's basically gotten away with it. But it's also kind of giving voice to the victims and letting them be the heroes of the story. And I think for Orner, the main thing she really wants us to get across is that he's basically not been held accountable, and there's no assurance that he actually will. And she's been pushing for the LA district attorney to bring criminal charges against him, but the office has been unwilling to do so to date.
I would ask about another movie you've seen. It's a movie based on the life of Harriet Tubman, directed by Casey Lemons.
If I'm free, my family should be too. I made up my mind, I'm going back.
Tell us a little bit about Harriet.
Yeah, I think Casey made some interesting choices in terms of the direction. She really went the route of an adventure movie, and she didn't focus so much on playing up, you know, the grotesque violence that was enslavement, although she didn't ignore it either. But she tried to focus more on creating an emotional impact through the characters, which I thought was really effective. There have been kind of mixed reviews of it, but I was quite moved by it. And one of the things I think the film does really well is the enslaved folks and the free black folks. There was a variety of different kinds of black people in the film, and there's no like one kind of black figure, which I thought was very smart and interesting.
We're talking with Beyondrea July. She's a film critic at The Hollywood Reporter. I'm going to ask you about a movie that I think you just saw this morning that I have seen that is apparently dividing a lot of people, and that is Taika Waititi's film Jojo Rabbit. This is about a young boy who thinks he wants to be a member of, like, the Hitler Youth. He has a special secret friend, Adolf Hitler, played by Taika Waititi, and then he comes to have his views about the world and about Hitler challenged. Without giving much away, I really like this film. What was your reaction to it?
Yeah, the film kind of stunned me in a lot of ways. There are definitely things I liked about it. My feeling is that if you're going to do a movie about such a momentous event in history, especially one that's been made into feature films multiple times, you need to have your thinking about it like super clear. And I think you have to have something in particular to say. And for me, that didn't come across very well. In the beginning, it felt like the jokes were more funny, more solid. And then as it went along, it sort of lost steam. And at the end, you know, it's sort of wrapped up in a nice little bow. And it didn't feel complete to me. And it didn't feel like the film had really worked out what it wanted to say.
There also was a premiere of Mariel Heller's film about Fred Rogers, starring Tom Hanks. What was your takeaway from that film?
I really liked this movie. I sort of had to warm to it in the beginning because Mr. Rogers, even though the film is about him, he's kind of the antagonist to the protagonist, played by Matthew Reese, who's this investigative journalist who's kind of hardened New York guy. And the process of the movie is him getting to know Mr. Rogers for a story, and it changes him in the process.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
It's just a really earnest movie, and it made me realize that there's so few of those these days of that caliber. It's very heartwarming, but not in a throwaway kind of way. I really enjoyed that, and I'll be curious to see what audiences have to say about it.
Having just been at Telluride and certainly having read about the coverage of Cannes, does it feel like Toronto is reaching out and making sure that behind and in front of the camera, we're seeing an array of different voices telling stories?
Yeah, I think they have been making a concerted effort on both ends of that, and also just a wider array of people watching the films. The critic pool is among the most diverse ever it's been for the festival. They've consciously tried to bring up those numbers and make sure that their programming reflects a wider swath of people, for sure.
Biandrea July is a film critic at The Hollywood Reporter. We reached her at the Toronto International Film Festival. Biandrea, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
One quick note about the Bikram documentary. After Bikram failed to pay a $7 million judgment against him 2 years ago, a judge issued an arrest warrant and Bikram reportedly fled the country. Coming up, the man behind the Parks and Rec mustache, Nick Offerman. Nick Offerman continues to embrace his career-making role of Ron Swanson from the hit TV show Parks and Recreation. But Offerman does a lot of other things, too. In no particular order, he's a serious woodworker running the Offerman Wood Shop out of East L.A. He's the author of several books, including Paddle Your Own Canoe, and he's currently touring a new live show, which is titled All Rise. Offerman told me how All Rise is different from other shows he's done in the past.
Because of this sort of fraught political climate that not only our country is in, but really the world is suffering under, I wanted to attack my writing differently. For me to feel like I was putting across a more medicinal message, perhaps, than I had previously. And so the easy thing to do would be to just go on stage and pluck all of the political low-hanging fruit of the day. But I don't think that helps. I think that only sort of adds fuel to the partisan fires. And so instead, I took a step back from the fray and said, I want to write material that's making fun of all of us because we've all done this to ourselves. We're in this country that purportedly we get to pick how things go. And look what we've done. We got ourselves in this mess where we're all screaming about our soiled diapers and, you know, somebody feed me. And so my goal with the show is, and with the title All Rise, is to point out things about really my, it's really me, you know, it's looking at a mirror and saying, okay, what tribal behaviors, you know, what sort of ruts are we in as a society that are partly at the root of these problems that I can make fun of. And by doing so, you know, maybe help us all step up a little bit.
It sounds like that's a little bit of an evolution in your way of thinking about the issues. I want to play a clip from 2014 when you did the Congressional Radio and TV Correspondents' Dinner in Washington, D.C.
All right.
Between the Republicans and Democrats, this city has become, let's face it, a noxious stinkhole where very little actually gets done because of the backstabbing, deceit, and greed. So I just want to thank all of you for making a Hollywood actor like myself feel welcome.
I mean, you're saying something that at the time was true, and obviously it's exponentially worse today. But at what point do you say to yourself there's a different way of looking at it, and do you think that there is something more curative in that approach?
Well, you know, for some reason, the things have become exacerbated to the point where a lot of more people in my world are succumbing to despair or cynicism. And for whatever reason, I seem to be an eternal optimist. And so just across the years of my life, I look at the evolution of our society, and it trudges inexorably forward. Even though from day to day, there's always tragedy and atrocity, you know, there are natural disasters, crimes against humanity constantly being committed. At the same time, as a world population, we are ever trudging forward, where gay marriage has become a ubiquitous accepted thing. And if you had told me that in high school, I would have said no way. That's where I draw my optimism from, and I say, okay, instead of insulting everybody, we're all worthy of insults, we're all worthy of praise, we're human beings, so we carry the angels and the devils all within us. In the show, I say, I believe that, you know, if you boil down the Constitution, purportedly the point of America is to be cool to everybody. And, you know, you can feel us just slowly like clawing our way
toward that
to
or
that
away from that
eventual goal.
The thing that's also interesting about the tour is where you're playing. A couple of weeks ago, you were at the Windstar World Casino and Resort in Thackerville, Oklahoma. I think in a couple of days, you're at the Fox Cities PAC, whatever that is, Performing Arts Center.
That's right.
In Appleton, Wisconsin. Are you intentionally not being a coastal tour where you're just playing New York, L.A., San Francisco, to actually play the entire country? And does the show play differently in different parts of the country?
It's interesting. To answer the first part, I never dreamed that I would get to tour with just a backpack and a guitar and show up to theaters around the world and give the audience a piece of my mind and sing some dumb, funny songs that I wrote. And they'll pay me and call that a job. There's a small percentage of the fan base that didn't understand that Parks and Rec was a comedy, perhaps, or fictional. And so there are people out there who consider Ron Swanson to be a real life, like, libertarian hero. And they come expecting like a treatise on the double barrel shotgun or something. And so they, you know, probably some of them come around to good humor. Some of them probably leave in a huff. But by and large, I think I've had enough exposure that people have a pretty good idea what they're getting. At the heart of Parks and Rec, and hopefully at the heart of my material, is a good-natured ribbing about how people are complicated. And I try not to insult people, but I do definitely, I'm very judgmental of foolish actions, you know. I would shake anybody's hand and offer them a sandwich if they came to my house. But if they happened to put kids in cages or something, I'd say, let's talk about this real quick. That's maybe not the coolest thing.
We're talking with actor, writer, comedian, musician, and woodworker Nick Offerman. You did not bring a guitar or ukulele that I can see.
I did not.
Is there a song? Are there new songs in your show? Is there something you could do even a cappella?
There's seven new songs. Let me think real quick of what doesn't have any terribly bad words in it.
Yeah, it's, it might be hard.
There's a bit where I talk about language and how human beings are so funny with their language. And in our country right now, we're furiously experimenting with the meaning of words like meet, consent, truth. We're really wrestling with what what defines these words. And the thing I love about science is that it's repeatable and provable. It's not open to subjective interpretation. And then I break into a song called "I'm No Scientist," that goes, "I'm no scientist, I'm just a simple man, but I got some loud opinions on things I don't really understand. Like, who needs years of research when you got folksy common sense? So put away your books and charts, I got some wisdom to dispense." And the best joke in that song is, "I'm no scientist, but I like to question what I'm told. So tell me, if this world is heating up, how come my beer's still cold?" And that usually that gets the point across.
I want to ask you about one other kind of side hobby or interest. I know an actor, I think his name is George Clooney, did some tequila that turned out to be pretty good.
That's right.
I can't say I drink tequila.
He's the ER guy.
And you've got a whiskey? Are you going to do a Clooney with a whiskey, if that's become a verb about making your own?
Yeah, I'm going to pull the Clooney. The Lagavulin Offerman Edition that is coming out this fall.
That is a real thing.
It is a real
thing.
So
it's a single malt whiskey?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
I'd be such an ass if I didn't cop to the incredible bounty that Parks and Recreation has brought me. Lagavulin is a really smoky, delicious single malt from Islay, which is a beautiful little island off the northwest coast of Scotland. And that was Ron Swanson's scotch. And so much so that by the end of the series, Ron traveled to the distillery in Scotland, and which was just such an incredible dream come true. I hit it off with the distillery. We became friends, and they hired me to start doing funny little comedy commercials that mainly exist on YouTube.
"Hello there, friend. Pour yourself a glass of whiskey and throw some more peat on the fire. I'd like to tell you the age-old story of the treasure of Lagavulin."
And we've been doing that, I think, for about 5 years now. Once a year, we go over there and shoot, you know, stupid Parks and Rec-flavored little comedy spots. And I guess it's done well enough that they're now putting out a bottle of their scotch with my face on it, a woodcut of what appears to be my great grandfather's face, and I'm just minding my manners I keep riding this train of good fortune.
Up next on The Frame, more of my conversation with actor, singer, woodworker, and whiskey connoisseur, Nick Offerman. Now, more of my chat with woodworker slash actor slash comedian Nick Offerman. It turns out when Offerman came to KPCC Studios the other day, it may not have been the first time. A few months ago, I taped a live interview here with Offerman's wife, comedian and musician Megan Mullally, who had this to say.
Yeah. Crazy.
Is he here? Can we talk about him?
Yeah, he's out in the car. Oh, shoot. Did I leave the windows rolling down? Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Somebody check.
You've been waiting a lot all this time, many months, but yeah. The windows were open. You had some food and some water.
I mean, that's the story of my career. I sat in the parking lot of NBC for 10 years, and then finally somebody asked me to come in and sweep, and somebody else thought that my mustache was funny, and here we are.
I'm curious about creative decisions, creative choices you make. You're doing something with Noah Hawley, Lucy in the Sky. I think you're doing something coming up with Alex Garland. How do you decide what gets you motivated, what interests you, and how has that evolved over the last couple of years in terms of choosing things and saying no to other things?
Well, it's a great question. There was a time, I don't know, 15 years ago, I was Mr. Megan Mullally. I had my wood shop, and I was working semi-regularly as a character actor. And I had driven from Los Angeles to Santa Clarita, which is maybe 45 minutes north, and that's where you had to go if you had an audition for CSI. And I had been up there maybe 7 times to read for some version of the rapist or serial killer.
Without being cast.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, the 7 times means 0 for 7. And number 8 came in, and this is probably over 4 years or something. And audition number 8 came in, and I said, you know what? They haven't given it to me 7 times. I'm not going to go. I'm going to start to choose to say no to things. And it's incredible to just ever get a job in Hollywood in the first place. And so if things go well enough that you get to the point where you can pick things, and that continued, of course, Parks and Recreation upped my cachet, I mean, exponentially, to the point where when that ended, the business is a business. So I suddenly was being offered huge sitcom lead contracts, but they were all about an ex-Marine who loves to grill or a football coach, you know, who's tough as nails. And I was like, yeah, that's the only thing I don't want to do is another mustache comedy. And so Megan and I have really always been this way, whether it's in the theater or in shooting for the camera. We don't go looking for a comedy or a genre. All we do is consider the writing that comes across our table and see what moves us. Doesn't matter if it's funny or tragedy. It's just writing that we think is good and working with people that we think are good people that won't be a nightmare. I'm really expecting something to come along for Megan, who is the greatest actress. I may be slightly biased, but she's known for her comedy chops, but her dramatic work is astonishing. And I'm just, you know, I'm expecting her to have a Bryan Cranston turn where somebody realizes she should be the lead of the next Fleabag or Breaking Bad.
I want to ask you one last thing about Woodworks. Explain what Woodworks is, W-O-U-L-D, and why it's important to you.
Well, Woodworks is a program in Los Angeles that was started by some very smart people. They're interested in trying to help us deal with our homeless problem here. And the idea of Woodworks is people on Skid Row or people who have lost their homes can sign up to come perform labor on woodworking objects, cutting boards and coasters and gift items. And instead of getting paid, they sign up to receive something they need to get back on their feet, which could be a pair of glasses, a suit of clothes, first month's rent, anything like that. And then they come and perform the labor. They're trained by a couple of the woodworkers from my shop. They do that. They receive their pair of glasses or whatever it is. But more importantly, they then receive a work reference where prospective employers can call and we say, yes, Julie showed up. She was sober. You know, I would take a chance on her. She's a good lady. And the thing is, when misfortune strikes you, which in so many cases, it's because of health care issues. It's like when you think of people in prison, your mind goes to this incorrect place of like, oh, it's a bunch of evil people. Or the homeless, you think, oh, it's a bunch of losers or drug addicts or whatever. And it's, when you meet them, you're like, oh, they're us. It's people who have met with misfortune of circumstance. Human beings don't want to lay around in a tent on the sidewalk. They want to do something that gives their lives meaning. And that's why it's called Woodworks. These people would work if they could. And when it came to my attention, it's just a natural fit for my wood shop. And I'm grateful that we're able to help prop up the organization as it becomes healthier and stronger, you know, I keep hoping for a platform to, I think every city across the country should have something like this. It's really healthy.
Nick, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Nick Offerman's All Rise comes to the City National Grove of Anaheim on October 13th. And that is it for today. Remember, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You'll find us at The Frame. I'm John Horn at the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC. We'll see you back here tomorrow.